From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. Today we turn our attention to the Central American nation of Nicaragua. Among the wreckage of that country's right-wing political opposition to the Sandinista government, it's hard to make out anything resembling a coherent political and economic program independent of clearly bankrupt U.S. imperialist ideology. So begins a piece at the Telesur English-language website, co-authored by our own Tony Solo. He speaks about a piece whose title translates Government's Petty Cash in Trouble by former Nicaraguan ambassador to the U.S. and Canada, Arturo Cruz, the right-wing academic. And we spoke with Tony Solo via Skype from Nicaragua Monday. Tony, welcome back.
Hi, Don. Good to be talking to you again. So, and there's, as usual, there's a vast range of activity to cover in the region.
Yeah, but let's go to this piece that you did. I want to focus on your piece at the Telesur's website, the English language website, Nicaragua's Right Wing Ideology and Wishful Thinking. It gives us a really good, deep look at the struggle between essentially the people and the right wing and the elites that they represent. Which is a condition that exists across the region, of course, and a struggle that is ongoing and at different stages around the region. And Nicaragua is a very interesting example of how the government and the left have been able to contain the right wing, who are pretty much minuscule in terms of support at this point.
Yeah, and this year's an election year in Nicaragua, and the election campaign got off just this last weekend. There was a whole series of events across the country for the launching of the Sandinista Party's electoral campaign. There are five, possibly six, opposition parties taking part in the elections, but as you said, their total support in a recent authoritative opinion poll by a company that's perceived as being aligned with the country's business sector, which means has a particular meaning here in Nicaragua, but they're by no means a left-wing polling company. They put support, committed electoral support for the five or six opposition parties at a total of just under 11% now.
Barely double digits.
Yeah, and that's divided among all the parties, right? So, in the past in Nicaragua, the electoral scene has been one of the frente, usually against an opposition party coalition. They pool all their votes and they agree to disagree for electoral purposes, and they go united against the frente. That's been the history, really, since the historic election of 1990, when the first phase of the Sandinista revolution came to an end with an electoral defeat, which was in fact the first occasion in Nicaraguan history, as far as I'm aware, in which one political party peacefully handed over power to its opposite.
That's right. That dictator, Daniel Ortega, handed over power to... Was it Violeta Chamorro that won that election?
Yeah, Violeta Chamorro, yeah. The widow of Pedro Joaquin Chamorro.
Right.
The legendary journalist who has opposed the Somoza dictatorship and was assassinated for his pains. So she was the kind of figure around which the opposition parties agreed to coalesce for that election campaign, and subsequently in the 1996 elections, 2001 elections, and 2006 elections. Again, it was an opposition coalition against the Frente, but this year it's the Frente against five different opposition parties.
Right, who were minuscule.
So the election result is likely to be an absolute landslide in favour of the Frente, because the opposition parties have so little support, and they're actually going into the elections competing against not just the Frente, but also against each other. So they're not going to do very well, and that's, you know. So, and that, of course, is in sharp contrast to what's happening in so much of the rest of the region.
Yeah, for sure. Let's look at the the claim to the contrary of what you're stating, that you laid out Cruz's arguments, basically. Maybe you could tell folks, first of all, who he is.
Yeah, Arturo Cruz is a very well-respected right-wing academic. He was the country's ambassador to Canada and the United States under previous right-wing administrations. His father was a leading player in the fight against the Somoza dictatorship, and subsequently his father decided to fight against the first Sandinista revolutionary government, and so he's a very well respected figure with a very clear place in Nicaragua's right wing, and he's perhaps not the only right wing intellectual, but he's certainly the most well respected right wing intellectual who tries to offer some vestige of intellectual coherence to the essentially the neoliberal arguments of Nicaragua's right wing. I mean, they actually don't have a coherent policy program that is independent of what we all recognize as the completely failed free market model promoted by the United States government and the United States elites. But, and at least he does try to give it some kind of intellectual kind of cover. And in the article that Jorge Capellan, my colleague, and myself wrote for Telesur last week, we point out that it's really quite spurious. And he makes this distinction. His argument is, because the problem for the regional right wing is, how do you explain the success of a socialist redistributive government, of a government with socialist redistributive policies, that is along with its ALBA partner Bolivia, it's among the three or four most successful economies in all of Latin America and the Caribbean.
And that success is measured objectively in a number of ways, including by the UN, acknowledged uplifting, and others, IMF even, uplifting of the people of those countries by these governments.
Right. So, and for the right wing, that's a problem. So what Cruz does is he says, oh, well, of course, the only reason that they've been able to be so successful is because they've been responsible in neoliberal terms, in terms of neoclassical economics and the Washington Consensus and all that.
He says
that Daniel Ortega has successfully implemented a free market model, right? And that's why Nicaragua has been so successful. And he says that Daniel Ortega and his government team have implemented that by means of a policy that Cruz calls responsible populism.
Right. that argument, just that that what's happened there is classic neoliberalism. If one were to accept that, why not demand it of all of the other governments in terms of policy, of all of the other governments that are practicing neoliberalism without that? In other words, instead of austerity and all of those things, uplift the poorest in the society and put the economy back to work, which is what's happened in Nicaragua.
Well, and so then Cruz develops his argument, and what he says is the reason that you wouldn't want to do that is because it's a model that produces dependence. It produces clients rather than citizens.
Right.
And so he draws this completely spurious distinction between the mass of the population that are that he argues should be being encouraged to be being more autonomous and being more thoughtful and being thinking more in the strategic abstract about how they want their country to develop and all that kind of thing.
Yeah, rugged individualism. But you know, I mean, what's interesting and is they are underlying that.
Sorry, John.
Let me just say, underlying.
He says, but in contrast to that, what the Nicaraguan government under Daniel Ortega has done is create a mass of clients.
Right, dependents. I mean, underlying it, he's basically saying this. He's saying, in this country that had homeless, hungry people with no medical care or education, a government that provided those made those people dependent upon it. That's his argument.
Yeah, and it's just so obviously offensive. It's deeply offensive, because what he's saying is, oh, forget about being hungry. Forget about the rain pouring in through your leaking roof. Because he criticizes specifically a couple of examples. There's one flagship program that is a program to help people's food security. There are various programs to help people's food security. And there's another program called Plan Techo, which distributes kind of millions of sheets of zinc across the country to low-income families who need to improve their roofing. And so he takes those examples and he says, oh, well, you don't need to worry about being hungry or having a leaking roof. The important thing is that you think in the strategic abstract about how to be a good citizen.
An academic's argument.
No, and just pathetic. Yeah. It's so, so condescending and patronizing.
Yep. And ivory towerish, because his roof isn't leaking and you know, he's not hungry, and presumably he believes that has something to do with his character and not the fact that food and roofing are available to him.
And there's that whole ideological matrix, isn't there, bit behind this ridiculous argument. Yeah. What we argue in our article, and we point out in our article, that the only way that Cruz can convincingly make his case is by leaving out the massive democratization of the Nicaraguan economy that has taken place since January 2007, when Daniel Ortega took office for the second time as president of Nicaragua.
Well, you would say even the democratization of the society that put the government in place that he claims the people are now dependent on. In fact, given the example of 1990, for example, that government is dependent on those people.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah,
and these are the kinds of arguments that Cruz he combines these phony arguments to kind of to lay out the right wing, the supposedly superior moral political right wing vision, with a massive omission of data about what has actually happened to the great mass of people in Nicaragua since January 2007. And so, just to give you an example, here in Nicaragua, people who support the Frente talk about the first phase of the revolution in the 1980s and the second phase that began in January 2007 that we're currently in. And the second phase is in many ways able to build on the very strong elements that survived from the first phase of the revolution, especially the land reform. And so one interesting fact, for example, is that in 1979, before the overthrow of Anastasio Somoza, before the land reform, well over between 50 and 60% of land holdings in Nicaragua were of 50 acres or more. Right. But that figure currently is just 18%. And so the something like 80% of land in Nicaragua is distributed among small and medium-sized producers, among the cooperative sector, right. and so forth. Right. And it is that made it possible for Daniel Ortega and his colleagues to implement an agricultural economic policy that has made it possible for Nicaragua to produce 90% of the food it consumes. And 85% of that food is produced in the cooperative sectors and the sector of small and medium producers.
That challenges his, his cloudy prediction that the current condition can't be sustained anymore, with the claim that it rests basically upon, or rested basically upon, high oil and commodities prices that were benefiting the ALBA countries, who in turn have been providing aid to Nicaragua, and that now is not possible, and consequently this condition is not sustainable. When they're producing their own food in the country, and these other institutional structural economic changes have been made that militate exactly against that.
Yeah, and it's between 2007 and now, Nicaragua received anything between $400 and $500 million a year in funds that were, because it was channeled through kind of a parallel sector, not through the government's national budget. It was beyond the control of the IMF in the first years of Daniel Ortega's administration, when Nicaragua was still subject to an IMF program. I think Nicaragua finally was able to leave behind the IMF program in 2012, something like that.
Right.
But all through that period, 2007 to 2012, every year, the net benefit to the Nicaraguan economy in terms of funds available for social projects, funds available for productive investment, funds available for infrastructure investment, derived from its development relationship with Venezuela in particular, but also with Cuba, that enabled Nicaragua to run a kind of deficit. It was able to deficit spend. It was the equivalent of deficit spending that under the IMF regime was completely taboo. Right. But they were able to do it because they had this relationship with Venezuela that was completely different to the traditional mechanisms of aid and debt that North America and Western Europe have traditionally used to maintain their advantage over developing countries. And so with that money, and also combining that money with funding from the traditional so-called development cooperation sources, like the Inter-American Development Bank or the World Bank itself, or the Bank for Central American Integration and Economic Integration, the BCIE, and all these different sources of traditional funding, combined with the Venezuelan money, has made it possible for Nicaragua to completely transform its infrastructure, completely transform its electricity generating matrix, so that it's moved from being 80% dependent on fuel oil for generating electricity to being something like, I think it's 60% of its resources currently and for electricity generation are from renewables. And so, and by 2020, they're hoping that over 90% of the energy matrix will be from renewables. So that's all the infrastructure investment, the investment in the agricultural economy, and one of the key things that Cruz leaves out is that almost all the government's flagship programs have been focused on women, women from low-income families who were previously completely excluded from economic activity. Right. So you have flagship programs like Zero Usury that offers microcredit facilities mainly to women in urban areas. Right. You have the another program called Zero Hunger that's focused on households in rural areas, people used to make fun of it because it basically consists of giving a rural family maybe a sow a pregnant sow or a pregnant cow or right. some chickens people used to make fun of it, but it's actually over the years it's actually transformed the food security situation and the economic situation of tens of thousands of rural families, you know. So that's all those programs explain why the government has such incredible levels of support, even after something like 10 years of being in office.
Yeah. You know,
it's unheard of for a president to have 80% approval ratings.
Right, no? Anywhere.
And that is the approval rating of Daniel Ortega, 80%.
You know, I mean, you write that he fails to acknowledge it all. In fact, he doesn't acknowledge it, let alone critique it, which is what you would think would be at the kernel of his argument, that the government has been focusing on building the economic infrastructure and the national income. It created it's created a growing and steadily growing domestic consumer market for the businesses there, the domestic businesses, and this investment in production. And these are things that are economic fundamentals that survive a cutoff of aid or whatever. These are things that, yeah. that just thrive and grow. And it's almost like a Keynesian style, juicing of the economy from the bottom up, basically, although it's also distinctive from that.
Yeah, and it has so many aspects, and I'm by no means either an ideological or an economic expert, you know, and I try and report what happens here, you know, and saying and try and make sense. We try and make sense of what's happening here, without having a very strong theoretical framework, you know. But I mean, it's just as you say, it's just so obvious. I mean, what the Nicaraguan government has done is it's focused on developing the domestic economy, both its productive capacity and its increasing people's income. The minimum wage goes up every year. Every year it goes up by something like 10%, usually in two stages.
That's amazing.
And what that means is that income levels have incrementally, gradually grown over the last 10 years to the point where people feel that they of course, they still have all kinds of economic problems, but they're not wondering where their next meal's coming from, which
right.
was the case in 2000 and in 2006, 2007. They're not wondering, you know, when the lights are going to come back on, which was the case in 2006, 2007. And at the same time, the government has radically diversified its international relations, and with an emphasis on developing and diversifying its trading relations with as broad a group of countries as possible.
Right. I mean, you mentioned this too, that they deliberately drew on the experience of the problems that they faced from the U.S. economic boycott in the 80s, from excessive dependence on support from the USSR, which many countries, Cuba, for example, suffered after that, 1991. And it's kind of the same condition that countries around the world are being forced to face, like Russia in the face of U.S. sanctions, also many of the countries of that region. And the governments are stable or unstable almost in complete line with the success of that policy, not necessarily the failures of the government, but just the melding of objective conditions that exist in each country and the success of the government in making the economy less dependent on, you know, one particular trading partner or bloc.
Right, and that's, you know, and that's the big dilemma for Venezuela, of course, isn't it? Because they're trying desperately to keep their economy functioning as well as possible, at the same time as they're subject to this fierce economic attack, both internally from their own business sector, and also externally from foreign enemies like the United States and its European allies, in particular Spain. So then, the other thing about the thing that what we're seeing now is there's developing a very, very fierce attack on Nicaragua, and I think I've been too optimistic in over the last couple of months, thinking that, oh, it's only to do with the elections. Now, after looking at what Cruz has been arguing and the kinds of arguments that are being developed on among the Nicaraguan right wing, what I fear is that once they realize and once it is actually clear that Nicaragua is not going to be dramatically badly affected by the eventual lack of access to the economic aid that it's been getting from Venezuela over the last decade, once they realize that Nicaragua is not going to be adversely affected by that, and once they see that the Interoceanic Canal is in fact going to go ahead, as people here are absolutely convinced that it will, the policy, the U.S. policy, will change and become more aggressive. And we've already, a couple of weeks ago, there was an article by former ambassador to Nicaragua, Robert J. Callahan, in which he says, how long is the, he argues very aggressively for a change in U.S. policy to Nicaragua, asking how much longer is the U.S. going to put up with Daniel Ortega's dictatorial behavior. that's how he put it. Now one's first reaction is to chuckle at that, but when you look at who Robert Callahan is,
right,
he is the historic factotum of death squad manager Nonpareil, John Negroponte.
Right. Yep.
And John Negroponte has been managing death squads ever since his days in the Phoenix assassination program in Vietnam.
Right.
He moved from Vietnam, did some work with Kissinger in over relations with Russia and nuclear disarmament talks and stuff like that. And he subsequently moved to Central America, organized the Contra War here in Nicaragua,
right,
from the Honduran embassy,
right,
organized the Dirty War in Honduras. And then after that period, he went into the private sector for a while, I think. Oh, he kind of, his profile kind of dropped, and then he reappeared as a death squad manager in Iraq.
And now he's making these pronouncements, and we'll have to leave it there, but maybe we can pick up next week with what a changed U.S. policy towards Nicaragua might look like, particularly given the coup that the U.S. backed in Honduras, which may end up making Honduras available as a staging area for that kind of an attack again.
Right. Okay, Don. Well, I'll look forward to talking to you about that.
Yep, me too.
When we get the chance.
All right, good. Thanks a lot, Tony. Pleasure as always.
Okay, thanks a million, Don. Good luck now.
Thank you. And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.